You might as well go through life smart as to go through life dumb. If you follow the Bible, even in its general outlines, and you don't know everything of it, you'll be smart. If you ignore the Bible, you'll be dumb. In a certain meeting, someone brought a guest, and we were dealing with the subject of Satan. And later, the member of the class who had brought the guest asked her what she thought. She said, "Oh, well, we don't take the Bible literally." And here's somebody not too far out of toddler age. Sweep of the hand. "Oh, well, I don't bother with that. I'll make my own way." Well, I'll tell you something. People who think they have it all in the bucket here, we haven't even got 60 seconds. That's about how long it takes for the building to collapse after the ground shakes. We're very much like Mexico City, which we think about today with concern and care, of course. But an engineer, very prominent engineer, told me just about 20 years ago that all the earth under Mexico City was a bog, and someday it would shake down. I don't think he was trying to make any oracle-type predictions, or just as an engineer. And incidentally, our embassy was built on that principle, and based on that fact, and we put a pad under it so that it remained intact. But the point I'm making here is we're all like Mexico City. We're over a bog. As far as the flesh is concerned, your life can shake down in a minute. I'll give you 60 seconds. I'll give you that, no more. That you have control over. And after that, you're in the clutches of the natural phenomena of this world. I've just finished an extensive article for the October Messenger on the subject of Satan. So it might be well worth your time when you get your messenger to read on the deep questions that surround what Satan is doing on the earth and what is his action and what is our response and so forth, because that is a crucial thing. We know God, more or less, and Christ, or his expressions, God and his expressions. People are less familiar with the enemy, Satan, but the enemy is very important to know. Today, certain football teams will be locked in combat. How many people would be in that stadium there if there was only one team on the field? And how long would anybody keep coming if the team that was on the field had not assessed the enemy ahead of time? Wouldn't be much of a game, not much of a contest, and nobody would go back. The enemy is a vitally important element. It is, in a certain sense, as important to know the enemy as to know the protagonist, or Christ in this case. The reason it's important to know the enemy is that you have to know what to elude and what to watch out for so that your identity with Christ can be, what shall I say, effective, profitable. Christ can save someone whether they know the enemy or not. But you're liable to get spread out all over the field if you don't know something about him. So anyway, we've put quite a little time into the enemy. The enemy is not always that easily recognizable. In the old days, when war was fought in normal ways, camouflage is very important. And Satan has a great many camouflages, a great many sidetracks. He's always clever about it. He's like the person that goes and puts a detour sign on the main road to throw somebody off into the brush when there's no need of a detour. And if you have the smarts to do it, you can just go through the barricade and keep going. If you're not aware and alert to those things, you'll take your detour and you'll bounce over the ruts and rubble and come to some grief on the way. So Paul said that. He is not ignorant of Satan's devices. And in my discussion with people, I'm trying to alert you to Satan's devices. That, of course, puts us in a mood of always having to speak rather negatively. But if you don't know the enemy, you're going to be in difficulty. So that's why we spend the time helping to prepare you for such exigencies. We can look at Mexico City and empathize with their tragedy and so forth, but it's still, as we sit here in our tranquility, quite a ways off. It's necessary to keep reminding you of these things so you're ready for it. It can happen here, you know. They pour a great many millions of dollars into these freeways, and one earthquake can shake it down. As you may have known if you were here a few years ago and saw what happened in the Sylmar area, where the great freeway sections, bridges and underpasses and on-ramps were shaken apart. They had to go in and rebuild the whole thing. No one is immune. And if you think you know what you're doing, remember that 60 seconds is all it takes to shake you apart. All of that vis-a-vis the point I was making, we are searching for clues. We're like the scout that visits the game of the opponent or the games of the opponent ahead of time to find out what's going on. And he checks the weak spots and checks the defenses and offenses and so forth so he knows how to cope with them, can relay that to the team. Well, that's what I am. In my role here, I'm something of a scout, looking for the clues that will help you understand the meaning of the enemy as well as of the world in which we live, which is not of itself the enemy, but is ruled by the enemy. A simple principle which evolved in this article, which I just wrote and which was just typed fortuitously, an essential element here is that when Satan was removed from heaven, which he was because of his free choice, you have to understand it's about Satan, that he was created with free choice, free will. One of the fundamental questions is, why did God make Satan, knowing he was going to be what he was? And is God not then responsible in a way for creating evil? I like to raise these hard questions. I never know when I raise them whether I'm going to be able to answer them or not. When I was doing some work in the field of landscaping and maintenance, we ran across a phenomenon in a certain area called, popularly, nutgrass. The problem with nutgrass is insidious because it has a certain root system, but then at the end of about a 1 foot tiny filament is the nut that happens to be the essence of its life. So people go through and take all the weeds out, right? Got the roots, everything, all springs up again. Why? Because they didn't get the nut down at the bottom. Because that's on a tiny filament that does not come up with the rest of the root system. So you have to almost replace the entire earth at least a foot down if you're going to get rid of it. And so my response when people ask, what should we do? I said, well, you got two options. You can sell the house or you can shoot yourself, one or the other. It's a very pesky pest. But we raise questions that have that kind of gutty aspect to them. What in the world are we going to do with this question? How can we answer it? How can you regard God as a God of grace and love and whatever else and have him create a world that is full of tragedy and sorrow? And if God does not have the power to handle it, then where is God? You know, what are we doing? If he didn't know this was all going to happen, he's not omniscient. If he couldn't do anything about it, he's not omnipotent. We've got our money on the wrong horse, in a certain sense. I'm not sure there's one out there to run that we could put our money on. But there is an answer. And the answer lies in the matter of the Spirit. But this has come, the understanding of this has come with the camel's hair brush. Understand, it's by sorting out the Bible and digging deeply into it and becoming facile in many languages and so forth that has made it possible to uncover these clues that the average person misses. It isn't that the word is obscure, even though it's studied. It is normally not studied. It may be read, but not studied and not followed. Mostly not even read. Books are read about it. Many, many books. Study groups are all over the country. What are they studying? Mimeograph sheets from someone in a far-off city. Hundreds and hundreds of people gathered for a Bible study, studying mimeograph sheets that have come from some non-qualified individual in another city. With the attitude that, well, anybody can read the Bible and understand it. No, you have to have a calling for that. But anyway, be all of that as it may. They're not studying, they don't know the Bible. The Bible's not being presented, it's the ideas about the Bible that are being presented. Outlines and stories and so forth. But what we're doing here is hard, tedious work in the hot eastern sun. But we're going to keep going with it anyway. So what's the story here? If God knew all of this was going to happen, this great tragedy of earth, why didn't he just leave it alone, forget it? Why make it in the first place? To answer that question, we have to look for a purpose that is far greater than the tragedies of earth. If we can find a purpose great enough, we can say that his creation was valid. But we are not going to find a great enough purpose if that purpose fundamentally means he's going to bring some kind of recovery out of the chaos of the earth. In other words, a person that looked to God as a handyman to recapture Eden, that if things go wrong on the earth, if you pray, he'll fix it. If you're not a Christian, he won't fix it. If you're a Christian, he'll fix it. And people who get hit are people who are not Christians, and people who don't get their lives fixed up are people who are not holy enough. See? That's the common thought. If you're really, really a Christian in Mexico City, you wouldn't have gotten hit. Or if you really trusted Jesus, or if you were really good enough. But that does not comport with real life, I have to say to you. I have too many unanswered questions. No, if God's purpose is consumed in giving us happy feelings on earth and fixing up our little nest to be cozy and warm and sweet and high, if that's what it's all about, he should have forgotten it in the first place. He wouldn't have had to fix it up if he never made it. So purpose has to go far beyond that. And it does. That's the answer to the question is that the purpose of God goes as far beyond the microcosm of this earthly life as a whole of society goes beyond the sandbox in a backyard. We can compare God's purpose with the total society around that. And as the sandbox is a realm of sandcastles and fantasies and illusions, of tempests in a teapot, so to speak, childish conflicts, of sand battles and so forth, as that is a lifeless, illusory element in comparison with the child that plays in the sandbox. You see the difference? The child is in the sandbox, but not of the sandbox. But those who are responsible for the child, the parents, the guardian, and so forth, see something far more in that child than the scion of a sandbox. If they thought that was all they brought a child into the world for, most people would choose rather not to bring children into the world. Now, the earth is the cosmic sandbox. I keep telling you that. The things you lose on the earth are illusory sandboxes, sandcastles. They get kicked down, and like little babies, we cry over it. We're entitled to cry. The children are entitled to cry. Sand gets in the eyes, but it's all tempest in a sandbox. And the parent does not come out to the sandbox and watch the scrap and say, "Oh my gosh, I'm sorry I brought him into the world." He knows, or she knows, that in a few years they'll grow up and they'll throw other things at each other, but not sand. No, the person knows there's more to that child than the sandcastles. And probably the parent is not going to come running out every 5 minutes and try to protect the sandcastle. The wise parent doesn't do a whole lot, but let the kids scrap and until they get to the place where they're going to kill each other, then you probably stop it. Most mothers, I think, would agree with the point that there's a limit to how much you can really keep complete order in a household, right? To do the best you can. You get through the day. But you see the point? If you say, "Oh God, why did you make us? We lost our house in an earthquake." It would be like the parent saying, "Oh, I shouldn't have brought this child into the world because somebody just kicked over its sandcastle." The purpose is so far grander than the sandbox. God's purpose is so far grander than the earth that all of its tumults put together are not reason enough for him not to have made it. But that is a kind of glory we can't see right now. Kids are terrified in the sandbox. And when the sandcastle gets kicked over, that is the most tragic moment of that young person's life. And they come crying into mother, and everything is terrible and off, and the rotten world and all of that. Because the child doesn't see. Now, you can't sit down with a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old and try to explain, "Well, now, son, you know, when you get to be 25 years old and you're a very fine professional, you're a lawyer or whatever, and you have your own family, you'll understand all of this." The 2-year-old does not understand that kind of talk. The 2-year-old understands a lollipop and a Band-Aid, and that's it. And that's what we understand on the earth. That's our level. The great tragedy of earth is how seriously we take ourselves, our great understanding of things. Now, fortunately, our fortunes are no less in the hand of God than the child's are in the hand of the parents. In other words, the parent doesn't order the child out of the house because it doesn't trust the world it's living in or trust the parents. And you imagine the child saying, "I'll make him 5 now. Mother, if you really loved me, you wouldn't let that kid kick my sandbox down." And so mother says, "Well, you're doubting me, right? Okay, go. Off. Here's your basket of food. Go. Go. I don't want to see you anymore." But that's what people think God does. They think because we cry and we plead and we beg and we kick around and we say things a little heavily to God, that he's going to shoo us out the back door. Say, "I don't want any more to do with you. You don't trust me, so go. Be gone." We don't trust a lot of things because we don't understand them. Well, we can't understand them because they're beyond us at this point. And happy the moment when the child gets old enough and trusts the parents enough to be able to say, "Well, you're right. I know this incident is not all that important compared with my ultimate goals and life." And that's a happy moment. It doesn't come very easily, but it comes. 30 or 40, you can sit down with your son and say, "Well, how's it going now?" Or your daughter. The answer to the guttiest question on earth, which is, why did God make it in view of the tragedies? Or why didn't he stop Satan from doing what he's doing? The answer is he made it because the purposes he has in mind are so far grander than the petty tragedies of the earth, and they are tragedies, that they outweigh all of the other considerations. Just as the meaning of a child and his or her ultimate growth and development is so far grander than the sandbox that no parent says, I'm sorry I brought that child into the world because all he does is kick over his sandcastles. Now that brings us to the essential reality, the recognition that we are part of the spirit realm of God, and that's where the purpose is. If you want a grander purpose, you have to seek it beyond the stars. When we have gone to the farthest reaches that we can handle, it still is not of itself any more than the sandbox, and still not grand enough to accommodate the purpose. Because we have to get to the epiuranios. Now that's, we got with the camel's hair brush. Epiuranios. Because that means the supra heavenlies, which does not mean distance or time, but quality, which is spirit versus flesh, versus natural. Epiuranios is a spirit realm. And we can find the epiuranios here as well as out there, because it's the spirit realm with which we are surrounded. In a sense, it might be likened to the ether waves around us, would be the epiuranios, you see, that which is beside the or other than the assumed expanses of the universe. See yourself as a spirit entity in essence, rather than a flesh entity. The flesh is only the vehicle. A lot of things happen to the flesh that are disheartening. Those are hard on the flesh, but not the spirit. They have nothing to do with the spirit. One doesn't say, oh my gosh, God is not with me because he let my car get wrecked. You don't say that, but it's idiotic. Idiotic. A lot of Christians are in that syndrome because they're programmed to that. If you just trust Jesus, he'll solve all your earthly problems and you'll never want for anything and you'll never hurt and you'll never cry. All you have to do is trust in Jesus. So your life may be a total chaos. Falling apart at the seams. Like the old German song, alles ist weg, Geld ist weg, Mädel ist weg, alles ist weg, ach du lieber Augustin, alles ist weg. That means everything's gone. Money, made, everything, gone. And your life may hit that sometimes. You think, I've nothing left. It's all shattered. And some people down in Mexico City, and maybe this is an appropriate message today. The people in Mexico City, many of them, everything is gone. Probably very little insurance coverage for a lot of those people. It's all gone. But that has nothing to do with the spirit. And it has nothing to do with faith. And if anyone would say, well, if you'd only had faith, God would have protected your house, that is idiotic. If John the Baptist had only had faith, he wouldn't have been put in that prison, right? Wrong. He was put in a prison and he had greater faith than anybody. God said of men born among women, there's none greater than John the Baptist, but he left him languishing in the dungeon of Machaerus and never even went and visited him. And I've said in another meeting, that was the greatest compliment he could ever have paid John. He didn't have to bring a basket of lollipops to keep John going. Now we all don't arrive at that place, and the Lord is gracious, and he understands our disappointment. You can cry if you want to. You can scream if you want to, or shout, or kick the wall in, or whatever, and God is not going to leave you. Emote any way you want. Just don't go down the idiotic trip that if God really loved you, he wouldn't let that happen. Well, I'm trying to help you get your feet on something beyond the universe and beyond the sandbox to the spirit realm where God is and where He's fulfilling you and everything in His purpose. You and I are members of a grand order of the spirits. You are members of the order of the spirits. And as such, you and Christ are together now, here, in spirit. You and He are walking together in this world. But don't forget that. And when things go bad on the earth, even though the Lord does a lot of things to help us, you know, I've had many, many things from the Lord that have ministered to my material needs. I'm not ungrateful for that, nor am I denying the possibility of it. Pray for a house, pray for a car, pray for food, pray for whatever you want, and it's valid. But don't put your weight on it, you see? Don't test God by the sandbox. And as the child is greater than the sandcastle, so you and I are greater than the material vehicle in which our spirits are carried through this fleshly realm. Why did He put us here? I don't really know that, but Jesus said in His so-called priestly prayer or intercessory prayer of John 17, Jesus said, "As you sent me into the world, I have sent them into the world. That we should manifest your glory." That's in another verse, but in that context. Keep your sights on the fact that you are people. And you walk about with the spirit of human and not with the spirit of canine. When you understand that you are a human and not a canine, you've come a distance. Though little children may not always realize that. They do things that the canines do, and they don't know the difference. But when they get older, they realize they're human and not canine, and there are certain things humans do not do, which canines do. See? They realize that. Now, what we have to understand is we're spirit and not essentially human. We're human only in outward aspect, but we're spirit in reality. And that's where all of our glory lies and all of our purpose, and that is high enough to make it worth God's creating us in spite of the great turbulence in the cosmic sandbox. I want to make it clear that failing to fully understand this spirit matter and people who maintain a fleshly aspect to their lives do not thereby forfeit their salvation. But a lot of people miss these clues because they miss a lot of meetings, and then they make dumb statements about God, what He is and what He isn't, and what about me and all that kind of stuff. And they're dumb statements, and it's because they haven't been to school, they haven't learned. These kind of thoughts just help you dig out of the rubble. But it doesn't mean you're saved and you're not. It just means that you got some extra ammunition, some extra defense for your lives. You need that, but you're not going to lose your salvation over it. I think that's important to understand. Well, let's pray. Father, we ask You to help us understand these truths, minister to our spirits, that we may go through this life with understanding and sensitivity. In Christ's name, amen.